Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, we're going to look at the movie that's probably going to topple Avengers off the top spot of the box office, and that would be Deadpool 2. Also, Book Club, Show Dogs, and Pope Francis, A Man of His Word. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Black Panther, finally out on DVD and Blu-ray, even though it's still in the theaters and doing quite well. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Little piece of news in the sort of the Me Too cleanup stages. You've got John Lasseter. If you recall, he was accused of inappropriate contact and touching while he was at Pixar, which is not good. I mean, that's not good stuff that happened, but it's a far cry from what was going on like with Harvey Weinstein. And Disney had made him take 6 months off. Now that those 6 months are coming up this week, will he return to Pixar? And some people have said, no, he's not going to. They had discussion at Disney and Pixar, and they were getting information from people who worked there. And yes, there were accusations and inappropriate touching and inappropriate behavior and stuff that wasn't quite stopped. But again, I don't know the full details of it. I don't think those have been disclosed, but it does seem like it's just he's maybe a little bit too handsy in the office. Again, huge difference between what was going on with Harvey Weinstein, or even some of these other really caustic accusations against people like Kevin Spacey. So he may return in the creative fashion, but with limited producer control. And my thought on this is bad behavior should be punished. Bad behavior should have some sort of consequence to it. But let's also not burn the entire thing down. When Harvey Weinstein basically lost everything, I mean, this is a guy who's accused of rape, who's destroyed careers, who used a complex money and power system in Hollywood to seek revenge on women who wouldn't sleep with him. And that's a huge difference from that and a boss who maybe hugs a little more than he probably should. He's a little more creepy. I mean, that's still not good behavior, but there does need to be a certain continuum of consequence along with the continuum of behavior. Let's dial back to hate a little bit on that. And speaking of hate, one of the movies this week is Book Club, which has Jane Fonda as a star. And I do a lot of calls around the country talking to different people about movies. And I guess I was alive. I was like maybe two when the real firestorm of Jane Fonda with Vietnam, the Hanoi Jane bits came out. It was like, what, 1972, 1973. So I was a toddler at the time. So I wasn't following that. I lived in a world post Hanoi Jane. I never saw her come up as a 60s actress. And what she did and the visits to North Vietnam was inappropriate and problematic and did sort of have, issues with, you're talking about like marginally the same sort of thing that went on with the Dixie Chicks when they were on foreign soil complaining about U.S. policy as a public figure. Or even if you want to look at something like with Jane Fonda visiting North Vietnam, the way like Dennis Rodman has visited multiple times North Korea because he and Kim Jong-un are big buds. I guess the question is, because I'm going to talk about Book Club later in this show, and one of the people, the host that I've talked to about, he like literally threatened to walk out of the booth if we talked about Book Club. And I'm like, that's a little extreme. And he's there talking, she should be put to death. She should have been put to death. And I wish this movie, she should die a slow death and this movie should die a slow death. And I'm like, okay, well, let's pump the brakes. First of all, yeah, you can get into treason and traitorism with, accusations of Jane Fonda. And yes, for vets, that was a real problem. And that's very offensive. Putting to slow death, that's a little extreme, don't you? Especially now. We're, almost 50 years from that incident. So not to say you have to like Jane Fonda, but you know, let's look at this with a little bit of perspective here, and also realize that there is a certain overblown nature to this. And my apologies to anybody who hates Jane Fonda. And I'm not a big Jane Fonda fan, but you know, I mean, I'll review a movie she's in. I won't boycott a movie just because of her existence. And I've learned in my years that if you don't politically agree with somebody in a movie, you can't just cut them out of the, you know, if you hate Alec Baldwin because of his politics, you can still go see a movie that has Alec Baldwin in it and enjoy the movie. You know, that doesn't translate necessarily to the artistic product. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is BlacKkKlansman. Opens on August 10th.
There's never been a black cop in this city. We think you might be the man to open things up around here.
Who am I speaking with?
This is David Duke.
Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. That David Duke?
The KKK is planning an attack.
How do you propose to make this investigation?
We'll establish contact over the phone.
We'll need a white officer to play me when they meet face to face.
So there becomes a combined
Ron Stallworth.
Can you do that?
With the right white man, we can do anything.
This is directed by Spike Lee. It made quite a splash at the Cannes Film Festival just recently. And I have a mixed bag reaction to Spike Lee's work. I think he's an immensely talented filmmaker. I think he has some very brilliant techniques. I think that his movies often buckle under their own weight. You can take a movie like Do the Right Thing and it moves more efficiently because it's trying to tackle racism in this very contained level, and it's a very topical film. But a lot of his other movies they collapse because he's doing too much. And then he started going to like more just mainstream movies, and he wasn't just going to be doing movies that were topical or firebrands. You know, movies like when he did Inside Man or even when he did Old Boy, which was an okay adaptation, but still had issues. But ultimately, I think he's a very talented filmmaker who needs to rein himself in. At least the trailer for this one looks interesting. I mean, it looks like it's an interesting story and historically an interesting story, but it also looks like it's going to have a punch to it that Spike Lee can give. And because it is racially charged, hopefully he can keep the focus going throughout the movie. I mean, I'm curious to see this film. The next one I want to talk about is Bohemian Rhapsody. Opens on November 2nd.
So now what?
This is when the operatic section comes in.
The operatic section, yeah.
Mamma mia, mamma mia.
Mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me.
It goes on forever, 6 bloody minutes.
I pity your wife if you think 6 minutes is forever.
We will rock you.
4 years they've been trying to make a Freddie Mercury biopic. And there have been a lot of people who've been rumored to try and do it. I remember there was a period of time where Sacha Baron Cohen wanted to play Freddie Mercury. And actually, I mean, physically, he would have been great. And he would have been also good as an actor in it, because he's a great actor in his own right, in terms of sort of like becoming characters. They finally ended up making the movie, and they got Rami Malek. He was in most notably Mr. Robot, but he's shown up in a bunch of other movies. I don't know if he quite physically embodies Freddie Mercury, and you only get a little bit from this trailer, but I mean, it's obvious it's just going to become, it's a biopic, it's a rock biopic, and those can be good. I mean, you're talking about stuff all the way like The Doors or any of these other, you know, musician biopic movies. I'm curious to see this just because I do think Freddie Mercury was a musical genius, and I thought that some of his songs that he did for Queen are still some of the best rock songs you're ever going to hear. I don't know how interesting his life is behind it because I'm not his biographer, but I'm curious to see it. I'm glad they finally got this movie off the ground. That is it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Book Club with Jane Fonda and Show Dogs.
Shirt, so sexy it hurts.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's dive right into the movie reviews. And we're going to start things off with Book Club for women of a certain age who have been meeting every month with a book club for decades, decide to read 50 Shades of Grey and end up rekindling their love lives.
Hi, beautiful friends.
I would like to introduce you to Christian Grey.
Oh, no.
We started this book club to stimulate our minds.
From what I hear, this book is quite stimulating.
If women our age were meant to have sex, God wouldn't do what he does to our bodies.
Speak for yourself.
Well, that was not God. That was Dr. Nazarian.
Book Club is not a movie for me. Okay? It's made for women of a certain age. We're talking about women who are the ages of the characters in this movie. Now, as they do all the time with movies, you'll find this. They declare the characters are younger than the actual stars are. Like, Diane Keaton's, I believe, in her 70s, but she's playing a character who's, like, in her late 60s. I don't know why that makes a difference, but it's out there. They're senior citizens. They absolutely are. It's just no one wants to call them that. And it's, this isn't like the Golden Girls, where the Golden Girls were like women comfortably in the matronly roles. You know, even Blanche, for as much of a kind of a go-getter as Blanche was in the Golden Girls, and even though she was the youngest, I believe, of all the women who played those roles, she still was kind of seen as the senior citizens. This isn't looking at them as senior citizens. This is looking at them as people's mothers, you know, these adult characters' mothers. And this all depends on what you think of the actresses. And like I talked about in the first segment, look, if you haven't forgiven, or not even forgiven, but come to terms with Jane Fonda and what she's done over the course of her life, yeah, you're going to hate every second of the movie that she's in because she's in the movie. If you can't even sit down and watch Jane Fonda in a movie without frothing at the mouth and seething hatred, then you're probably going to not want to see this movie. But, you know, and even then, her character's kind of, it's the least interesting of the four. You know, the most interesting one I actually thought was Candace Bergen's character. I mean, because she's a judge who's had a divorce, and so she's trying to rekindle her own love life. But Candace Bergen, we haven't seen a whole lot of her. And of course, she's, I think this is purposely preceding the Murphy Brown reboot. And of course, you're going to start seeing more of her on TV when that comes back to CBS this fall. But I've always thought Candace Bergen had a great wit. I always thought she had a great delivery, and she's always been a very funny woman. Diane Keaton is very charming. She kind of plays the flibbertigibbet Annie Hall character that she's kind of played in over the course of her career. There's some stuff that doesn't work. There's some stuff that doesn't exist in reality. Like, for example, one of them is Diane Keaton's character has two daughters, I think, and they want her to move out to Phoenix with them. And they each have husbands, but you never actually understand whose house they're wanting her to move in with because they never discern it. It's this weird familial relationship that's not actually defined in the movie, and it almost seems like the sisters are living together with their husbands in the same house and then want the mom to live with them too, which makes no sense to me. So it's those weird things you kind of have to jump over. And of course, everybody has their own relationships. You got Andy Garcia playing one of the relationships, and the guy from Coach, Mr. Incredible, he's Mary Steenburgen's husband. And of course, you've got Jane Fonda's falling in love again with Don Johnson, ironically, whose daughter plays in the 50 Shades of Grey movie. But ultimately, it's fine. It's a cute movie, and it has some laughs to it, but it's made for, you know, women of a certain age. It's something I like to call these films old people having sex movies, because there is a kind of a weird little subgenre that exists of older people in the older generation, senior citizens or people at retirement age, kind of rediscovering, sexuality. And we've seen these things before. There was that one at Christmas, didn't do very well. I think Just Getting Started. And of course, there's Going in Style. And there was, of course, Hope Springs a couple of years ago with Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones at a sex clinic. So these movies come around, and they actually do quite well with the older audience, but they aren't the people who run out and see it on Friday night or Saturday night. You usually see them catching the matinees sometime in the middle of the day, you know, before they go have the buffet for lunch at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But my biggest beef with Book Club is, can we just put this whole 50 Shades of Grey thing to bed? I mean, 50 Shades of Grey was a phenomenon that should never have been a phenomenon. It was one of the most misplaced pop culture discussions we've ever seen, and horribly handled in all ways from the book, because I actually read the first book. It's terrible. And then the movies themselves. Is there a safe word that we have that can stop 50 Shades of Grey from being a thing? I really wish we could, because it makes this movie feel like it was pitched when 50 Shades of Grey, kind of when the movie came out and they realized what a hit it was going to be. And by the time they got around to making the movie, the joke's already played out. That's the danger in having a relatively long production schedule and then trying to make it relevant to what's happening right now on trending on Twitter. It'd be like having, like making a movie about the difference between Yanni and Laurel. Anyways, I got to say, you know, overall book club, it's cute. It works for what it is. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Show Dogs. In this movie, which wasn't screened for many critics for fear of discovering it's a steaming turd sandwich, a police dog goes undercover in a dog show to find a missing panda?
Max is the best canine on the force.
I'm good at taking a bite at a crime.
But to crack this case,
a baby panda was stolen and they're using the dog show as a front for animal smuggling. I'm working undercover.
He'll have to be best in show.
Whoa.
The glamour, the fashion, the toilet water.
He can't do it alone.
I'm deputizing both of you.
Oh, God. You know, I watched the trailer for this. Thank God this is one of those movies where I am just happy they didn't screen it, because that means I didn't have to see it. And I'm not going to go out and spend the money to see this one on Thursday night. Now when there's big movies like Deadpool coming out, this is a movie that's as far under the radar as you can get. And I know that the sort of animated animal movies can do well. I mean, Peter Rabbit did extremely well this winter. And you had movies like Marmaduke. And of course, you had Garfield and Beverly Hills Chihuahua. It's directed by the guy who did Beverly Hills Chihuahua. But more telling, he directed the Scooby-Doo movies. The trailer looks terrible. And I don't mean just terrible. I mean, it aesthetically, it looks bad. It hits all those jokes. It's like, oh, we got to have the dog farting joke. We got to have the biting somebody in the butt joke. We got to have the licking themselves joke. We got to have all, it's like they have a little list of ticking off every crass dog reference you can have. And it really looks terrible. It feels like something that would have aired on basic cable as a made-for-TV movie, but for some reason, they decided to give it a big screen treatment. I mean, this makes the Air Buddies movie look like those are brilliant compared to this. Just, I mean, like, they did those Cats and Dogs movie, and then they did the sequel, Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore. I mean, this doesn't even look, and when I say it looks bad, it looks aesthetically bad. The effects aren't even good. And I mean, we're talking like we've had, what, 20 years of computer-generated animals talking? I mean, I remember back even more than that, because didn't the movie Hocus Pocus, that Halloween movie, that had featured a talking cat in it? I mean, this is technology that's been around for decades, and it still looks like garbage in this film. So anyway, or in the trailer, at least. I don't know. I can't tell you what the whole film looks like, but it's like rocking like a 3% on Rotten Tomatoes. And well, that means it probably sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Deadpool 2 with a special guest. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with Deadpool 2. And I want to bring in a special guest, and that is my son, Benjamin Carr, or as I like to refer to him, as the resident young person. Ben, say hello to the audience out there from the magical studio in the sky.
Hello, everybody.
Yes. Now, tell everybody, you know, who you are, how old you are, all that good stuff, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the Deadpool movies, because we're not just going to talk about the new one. We're going to have a little bit of a retrospective and look back at the first one.
I'm just a freshman in high school. I enjoy theater. I like to hang out with my friends, do stuff after school, all that sort of stuff. Normal high schooler things.
Yeah. You're almost 15. You're 14.
Yeah.
14 and a half. Well, 14 and more like 9/10 at this point.
Yeah.
because you're going to be 15 next month. Mm-hmm. And then he's going to start driving, and then the world's going to end. Watch out on the roads in Columbus, Ohio, if you
have to. Stay off the sidewalks.
That's right. Stay off the sidewalk. But anyways, Ben, I took you to see Deadpool 2. But I think it's important to point out how irresponsible of a father I was, because I took you to the first Deadpool, which was 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And actually even earlier, it's more than 2 years ago, because I came out in February of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have been 12? A lot closer to 12 and a half. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how terrible I was. It's not even a PG-13 movie. It's an R movie. It was a hard R movie. What were your thoughts on the original Deadpool? And as you talk about it as the, sort of like that teenage boy, which I think as violent and as raunchy and as full of sex comments and graphic violence and really inappropriate content, it is kind of aimed for that market, don't you think?
Yeah, being someone who has never actually read the comics of Deadpool, other than like a few panels and strips, I can see how it appeals to people like me, people my age who enjoy that sort of humor, that sort of action. And it's really, it is targeted towards the audience that I am a part of. So it's like, it's very appealing to my generation, I guess.
Well, and not just your generation, your age group. I mean, yeah. Let's be real here, people, because, you know, the point is that they have these rating systems, you know, PG, PG-13, and R. And R, of course, you know what R means. What's the age limit for R?
17?
17. It's the official thing, and it's no law. It's just it's an arbitrary code that the theaters and the movie studios use. And it says that no one's allowed into an R-rated movie without a parent or guardian. And of course, I'm your parent or guardian. They really don't check at the screenings, because I took you to the pre-screening for both of these.
Yeah.
But let's just say there's this false facade in the world that we think that, you know, a 12-year-old is going to be corrupted by seeing a movie like Deadpool. Let me just ask you this, as somebody who was 12 when the first one came out, just tell me your first impressions of Deadpool, the first movie.
It was everything that I hoped for in a Deadpool movie.
It was funny.
Yeah, all the fourth wall breaks and all of the crude humor.
And I think there's a lot of people who think, oh, well, you know, that's really raunchy to tell a 12-year-old. Was there really anything in the first Deadpool, not even talking about the second one, in the first Deadpool movie, was there really anything that, let's just say, isn't said or discussed or thrown out there by your friends at lunch or on the schoolyard or anything like that?
There's nothing that I've heard in that movie that I hadn't heard before.
Okay.
Let me just put it that way.
And you're just an average white kid from the suburbs. So yeah. There's nothing in this situation where you're not sheltered, but you're also not living in like a, you know, some hardcore setting or anything like that.
Yeah.
So the idea that Deadpool is an inappropriate movie for a 12 or now a 14-year-old, almost 15-year-old, is a little bit absurd, because I remember what it was like when I was 12 or 14. And, oh, I didn't use this language in front of my parents, but I used a lot of this language in front of my peers.
Yeah.
Is that an accurate statement? I know you're on record and
it's accurate.
Uh-oh, your mother may not want to listen to this
Shh,
episode.
Don't tell.
All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the Deadpool 2 review. And in this movie, after facing a personal tragedy, the Merc with the Mouth takes charge of protecting a young mutant from a futuristic cyborg cop.
Hit it!
There's this kid. He's in trouble.
Move or die.
Pump the hate brakes, Thanos.
I ain't letting Cable get to him. But I can't do this alone.
We need backup.
We're gonna form a super duper group.
It's time to get back on LinkedIn.
You're no hero. You're just a clown. Dressed up as a toy.
So dark. You sure you're not from the DC universe?
And last but not least,
Peter.
Any power you want to tell us about?
I don't have one. I just saw the ad.
You're in.
All right, Ben, first have at it. Tell me what you thought of this movie.
From the first movie, it had more like Deadpool sort of elements, like with the whole crude humor and
this had more?
No, this movie had less of the crude humor and the fourth wall breaks, because in the first 15 minutes of Deadpool 1, there was already like 10 fourth wall breaks. And in the first 15 minutes of Deadpool 2,
There were some, but there wasn't as much.
It wasn't as much. I don't think it was as all out as the first one.
Well, I think in that first one, they kind of had to establish that was a thing. So they kind of really ramped that up in the first 20 minutes of the movie, just so you knew. So the people who never read the comic or don't know anything about Deadpool could become acclimated to the character.
Right? Yeah.
And did you like this one?
Yeah. It was sort of like a change of pace from the first movie.
It is different. I will say that. And this is the real challenge, because when they made the first Deadpool, it was so fresh.
Yeah.
And so different, because up until now, there had been R-rated superhero movies, the Punisher movies, of course, and even something you could say comic book movies like 300, or even Watchmen was an R-rated movie, but the R-rated superhero movie genre really kind of took off, and it's only a couple years old because Deadpool was a huge hit, Logan was now a huge hit, and then this one's probably going to be a huge hit as well. Up until then, people were expecting very kind, not squeaky clean. They weren't expecting Boy Scouts, but they were expecting Avengers level of violence or carnage. And this thing just goes raw fast. The first one goes really raw. When you have something that's so groundbreaking, different, and unique in the marketplace, it's hard to do a sequel, because how do you match that?
It's like when you make something that's just so good. You have to find a way to get even better than that.
Or even up to that level.
Even up to that level is very difficult, because as you said, it was trying to set a basis. And for that, you have to take everything from all of the comics and smash it all into one, under 2 hours to get that idea into the audience's head. And even then, the first 30 minutes has to set a basis for what the audience expects.
And now you expect it. It's sort of like, I showed you all, and you've seen him before, but I think you were much younger when I showed him, because again, I'm a totally irresponsible parent. Mm-hmm. I showed you the Matrix movies this year, and you've never seen them when they haven't all been available to watch right away.
Yeah.
When the first Matrix movie came out almost 20 years ago, back in 1999, it was so groundbreaking and different and so shocking that it really wowed the audience. And then when the second one came out several years later, it just didn't do the same. It didn't have the same wow factor. And I think people were, you're never going to experience that first Matrix movie completely unique again. And I think that's the same way with Deadpool. Is this one isn't as shocking, isn't as surprising, isn't as unique, isn't as fresh, because we already had another movie to compare it to. And that's no fault of this movie, but you're right. I do think the plot is different enough that it's taking him in a different direction without being corny.
Yeah.
So you like the humor.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any problems with it? Anything that you thought got in the way?
There wasn't anything that I thought got in the way. And I definitely think there were some positive aspects, because we were sort of going over the whole, it wasn't as blah, blah, blah as the first movie.
Yeah, it wasn't as raunchy, wasn't as violent, even though it's extremely violent and raunchy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying that it's not at all any of those things. It is very much those things.
I thought they did a good job making a follow-up to the movie and making it as much like the first one as possible. It really feels like there's a lot of connective tissue there, but they also gave its own unique story without going corny or goofy and really made it mesh with the first one.
Yeah.
So final grade, Ben, what is your thoughts on Deadpool 2 to final grade?
Totally rocks.
I'm going to have to agree with you. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Pope Francis, A Man of His Word, which is basically another Deadpool movie, if you want to look at it that way, and the box office and the home cinema roundup featuring Black Panther. Let the sky fall. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and wrap things up. The next film I want to talk about is Pope Francis, A Man of His Word. Wim Wenders takes a look at this new pope, his influences, and how he plans on changing the Catholic Church for this millennium.
For the first time in history, the Pope opens his doors to address the questions and issues we face together. As a leader whose faith inspires the world.
I have the distinct honor of presenting to you Pope Francis of the Holy See.
Buonasera.
From award-winning director Wim Wenders.
Nos dice que no se puede servir a dos señores. O servimos a Dios, o servimos a las riquezas.
First of all, I'm not Catholic, so just want to throw that out there. My family was, my father, he was raised Catholic. His mother was a very pious Catholic. So I have a certain understanding of sort of like family historical Catholicism, you know, good old Irish Catholic family. But I was not raised Catholic. I was baptized Catholic. Am I sharing too much about this? Anyways, so I don't have any sort of like personal connection to the Pope or reverence to that. I mean, you can respect the position and you can respect the man, but so it's not like I'm not coming at this from a Catholic's view. And I think that's really who this movie's for, not just Catholics, because the Vatican and the Pope have a lot of influence much farther outside of just your average Catholic life. So I am looking at it as a bit of an outsider. And it's interesting because this is apparently, this was unheard of. This was a groundbreaking film because the Vatican and Pope Francis kind of opened things up and allowed Wim Wenders to bring in his documentary crew and follow him around and kind of get unprecedented access to him for interviews and to watch him do his travels. Now, what you're not going to get with this, you're not getting some hard-hitting dissection and critical deconstruction of the Pope's daily life or anything like that. Very little of this movie has anything to do with his home life at all. I mean, they just make passing reference to it. Most of this movie involves him visiting places, looking a little bit of at his history, him doing interviews, doing sit down and being interviewed for the camera. So it is quite prepared. I mean, this is not some raw look at what it's like behind the walls of the Vatican, because you're not getting that. And I imagine that the Vatican had plenty of stipulations on what you can and can't shoot, because like I said, it's the first time they've given any filmmaker this much access to the Pope. And I think it's indicative of Pope Francis, because he seems to be much more about outreach. And this look at Pope Francis, it's interesting, and I think it shows how progressive he's being in his approach to certain things and his approach to international issues and stuff like poverty and hunger and wealth. And, you know, these are things that swerve into politics and, even some of the sexual stuff. I mean, not talking about the abuse allegation, but they briefly kiss along the edge of, you know, the LGBT question, which I know still, you know, the LGBT members aren't a huge fan of the Pope, because there's some doctrine that and dogma that still certainly conflicts with the who these people are, but they don't spend a lot of time on that. They spend most of their time on poverty and what can be done on a geopolitical level with refugees and that sort of thing. And you do get a look at the Pope's views of that, but it is very prepared and it is very safe, and it is, I wouldn't say a puff piece as much as it is, but it's definitely a positive look at him, and not a critical one if that's what you're looking for. But I mean, if you're Catholic and you want to see, you know, reverence to the Pope, that you're going to get that with this movie. And overall, it's a well-made film and it kept my interest. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Of course, Avengers still topped the box office last week with $62 million. Life of the Party came in pretty soft at like 18. And what's funny is Breaking In only made like $250,000. It made like $250,000 less than Life of the Party, but that was seen as kind of a success. It overperformed. And again, this is not, you read these box office reports and some people are trying to, you know, spin it in such a way of going, oh, well, people want to see these Breaking In thrillers, but nobody wants to see Melissa McCarthy be funny. And I'm like, the movies literally had almost the same number of people going to see them. They were almost equally as popular as each other. It's more about how much is spent. It doesn't mean that a movie like Breaking In is any more well-received than Life of the Party is. The same amount of people went to go see it. It made almost the exact same amount of money, but these high, broad comedies, broad being wide, not female, but these high, broad comedies, if they become expensive, like if they cost $50 million or more to make, that's when it starts to become dangerous. And we've known this for decades, to pretend that cheap comedies or cheap movies, like even if they're thrillers or horror movies, to pretend that those movies, we've just discovered cheap ones do well when you have even a small audience. That's nothing new. That's the whole reason the slasher genre took off in the 80s, because you can make those movies for like $1 million or less. But, yeah, Avengers still topped that box office, and, it's gonna go down this weekend. I'm sure it's still gonna do well, but of course, you know, Deadpool 2 is going to win. I mean, going into the weekend, it started out with like almost $20 million before Friday even started. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Speaking of Marvel movies, because technically, even though Deadpool's not a Marvel Cinematic Universe property and it's done by Fox, it's still from the Marvel characters. You've got Black Panther is out on Blu-ray and DVD for home viewing, which is great. I mean, this movie has such longevity. It was still it was still in the top 10 last week. It made like $2 million and it had been out for, 13 weeks. And now you can get it on DVD and Blu-ray. So, I mean, talk about something riding the wave right into the video movement. But let's just talk really quickly about Black Panther, since, we haven't talked about it enough over the last couple months. In this superhero film mega hit, a prince of the country Wakanda in Africa faces a challenge to his throne, which could lead to the downfall of their enlightened civilization.
My son, it is your time.
Show me my respect and bow down.
You get to decide what kind of king you are going to be. Don't freeze.
I never freeze.
I waited my entire life for this. The world's gonna start over. I'ma burn it all.
I'm on board with Black Panther. If you recall back in February, I enjoyed it. I think it's funny now that there seems to be this backlash going on now, because always whenever there's something popular, there's always then people who a couple months later are like, oh, I don't like it, it's not that good, and then they have that backlash, and then there's a backlash to a backlash. And so now it seems to be popular to say, oh, I didn't like Black Panther, even though it made $1 billion and some million. But then people now are going after those people. There's a guy I know on Facebook, a friend of mine that I knew in high school, and he finally sat down and watched it this week, and he said he didn't particularly like it. And people jumped all over him. I mean, he's not like that racist lawyer out in New York who berated the women for speaking Spanish and is now being trolled on the internet. He just said he didn't particularly like Black Panther, the movie, and people are going after him. So, let's temper our response to that. It's okay to not like a movie. It's okay to not like Black Panther. And if you don't like Black Panther, that doesn't make you a racist. It's okay. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie, and I think it delivers a great 1-2 punch with Avengers this summer. And, I don't know. Can Marvel do better? I didn't know it was going to do better after the first Avengers, but yeah. The extras on this one are pretty good. It is kind of full. It has a whole bunch of looks at how they brought it to screen and deleted scenes and a gag reel and a bunch of behind the scenes featurettes covering everything from the women of Wakanda all the way to the technology that they have, and they have a look at the Ant-Man and the Wasp, which of course is coming up in July. And of course, there's a little celebration for the 10-year anniversary of Marvel Studios. Talk about a success story in Hollywood and doing it right from the beginning. But overall, Black Panther totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other releases this week are Rick and Morty Season 3, and the 30th anniversary of Die Hard in 4K resolution. And there's also steelbooks of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the 8th Dimension. Two great films from the 80s that not everybody gets. That's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Solo, A Star Wars Story. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.